Okay, so today we're going to have our first company presentation, probably first and last. The company has this interesting name of Dendrion, and it's going to be presented first in two parts, first by Edwin Liss. Now, wait, Edwin, I didn't start with you. Okay.
Hi everyone, good afternoon. Our company is called Dendrion, and what they do is a type of immunotherapy. And it's a biotechnology company that's focused on targeting cancer. So it was started in 1992, and its company is headquartered in New Jersey, Georgia, and California. So the main premise behind the company is as follows. It takes cells that come from you and uses them as immunotherapy to train the immune system to fight disease. So how does that work? So Dendrion's main product is called Provenge. So Provenge is an immunotherapy. It was approved in 2010, and it's very cool. So how does Provenge work? So Provenge is used to target late-stage prostate cancer. So as you can see here, this is stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, and stage 4. And as you can see, as the stages progress, there's an increasing amount of tumor growth, and eventually there's metastasis when cancer cells invade other parts of the body beyond the prostate. So Provenge is designed to treat late-stage prostate cancer. So how does it do this? Well, first of all, the APC cells, also known as dendritic cells, are antigen-presenting cells. So what they do normally in the body is they take in proteins, digest them into fragments, and present them to T cells, which then form antibodies against these fragments and then can then fight off infection. So what Provenge does is first, a patient goes to a doctor's office, and then APC cells are extracted from the patient's system and are then packaged and sent to the company. So the company exposes the antigen-presenting cells to the PAP protein, which is common in late-stage prostate cancer, and then the APC then processes the antigen, and after that, the APC is activated. And when the APC is activated, it's sent back from the company into the clinic, which is then injected back into the patient. And since these APC cells are already activated, they turn inactive T cells into active T cells, which then go on to fight prostate cancer cells. So it's a very straightforward concept. So about the technique, patient, and patient selection, I will hand this off to my partner, Yiting.
Okay, so we know the principles, and now we need to know how does it actually work. So in terms of the patients, there are certain limits on the kinds of patients that are eligible for the treatment because the cancer cells need to actually express the protein of interest on its surface for the immune system to be able to actually recognize it. So the requirement the company currently use is that they need to have a fairly aggressive form of prostate cancer, and in terms of a classification, so they need a Gleason score of 7 in terms of 2 to 10, so that indicates a fairly aggressive forms of cancer. So once the patient is identified, then they are taken into the doctor's office and they go through a process called leukapheresis, where the blood from the patient is drawn through a machine. The machine then spins the blood, separates it into the components, plasma, leukocytes, and red blood cells. So the middle layer, the leukocytes, are then extracted for later processing, and the blood is returned to the patient. And so once the leukocytes are shipped to the facility, then they incubate the cells, and they didn't specify how they specifically seek out the APCs from the population. So our hypothesis is that they simply incubate the entire population in the fusion protein that contains the PAP, which is the protein that identifies prostate cancer, along with a activating protein that activates the mechanism of the APC. So upon this incubation of the APC with the fusion protein, then the APC uptakes the fusion protein, digests the protein into pieces, and display the pieces on its outer membrane. So once this happens, okay. So before that, so the PAP is present in about 95% of prostate cancer cells, and the GSF and the GM-CSF helps APC to mature. So after incubation, which is about over here, so the patient goes back to the doctor's office, they get the infused product back in their bloodstream, and upon re-entering patient's own body, the APC, they will turn naive T cells or the TH0 cells to recognize this PAP protein. And this process doesn't naturally happen in the patient, because they found out that prostate cancer cells, they've developed certain mechanism to evade this identification of the body's own immune system. So by taking the APC cells outside of the patient's body and giving them the ability to identify the protein of interest, they found this to be fairly effective in helping the body's immune system identify and fight the existing prostate cancer. And so on a side note, so a fair bit of patients, they do experience certain kinds of fever, chills, and groin pain. And although not disclosed, we think these symptoms are signs that it's an immune response mounted by the body first. It's fairly similar to us having a fever, where the immune system recognizes the foreign antigens and then mounts the response. And the groin pain could be the attack on the prostate tumor. And overall, in their clinical trials, about 0.3% of patients are not able to continue the treatment from the adverse effects. So overall, this treatment has a fairly low failure rate when it comes to adverse effects, and could be the first step towards a existing field of medicine in the future, where the medicine is tailored individually to the patient and also helps to lower the adverse effects associated with current existing treatments. Thank you.
I think you might be interested in knowing how much does it cost for this treatment. It's $93,000, three infusions of coverage. So it's something to think about. It's along the life of the patient, approximately 4 months. So is it worth it? Because it was just you can think about it.
Which, for comparison, a lot of the other forms of current treatments for cancer run into the hundreds of thousands. So then, in terms of a cost-benefit analysis, this is on the cheaper end of the scale.
But it is very kind of personalized medicine, which is taking your own injury cells and doing something that is specific for you. That's why it's so successful, and I think this is the future.
Why is it 4 months?
No. During the clinical trials, it showed compared to placebo patients, they live longer, the ones in COVID.
And the 4 months is the time of the chromosomal time.
Yes, the chromosome of that.
But this was my question, why is 4 months? Why is not longer than it can be?
That's the result of the treatment. This patient had a life expectancy of 2 years, more or less. So you 4 months, oncologists say that 4 months is like a good amount of time. But like almost $700,000, I don't know. And it's still debated like where whether or not it's gonna be included in the Medicare.
Anyway, premature. There must be some more questions. Only had one question outside of the three people who presented.
Neil?
It seems like this can be useful in a variety of treating a variety of other diseases. Is it being explored?
Yes. They are currently undergoing some clinical trials for breast, ovarian, and colorectal, but it's still clinical trials. But I think this problem thing, it was huge. I mean, because like with the approval of this was huge. I mean, it's really personalized medicine. And I guess like one day, and the results from the clinical trials were very good. So like if they can do it for other types of cancer.
So the one thing to keep in mind about this treatment's limitation is that the cancer of interest, it needs to present a unique protein, because if any other body parts express the same kind of marker, then we get an autoimmune disease. Jesse?
What was the
indication?
TA? 2010.
Yes.
So the tumor cells then mutate to present different surface antigens, or why COPD is actually stopping cancer from growing?
So think of it from a evolutionary pressure point of view, because we are only targeting cells that present this PAP protein. So any tumor cells that are aggressive and does not present the PAP proteins, there is a favorable pressure for them to continue their survival. So given 95% of the cells do present the PAP protein, so the remaining 5%, those could be the ones that escape this treatment. Neil?
Could they use like combination therapy or like do this for multiple markers to address that?
I'm not sure whether there are any different markers that have been discovered, but then in terms of chemo, we can use chemo with this because chemo would deplete the white blood cells. So it remains to be seen. Yes.
From what I understood about this company, that they do, it's not the first line of treatment that they use. They start with chemotherapy, and well, for the cancer, it's slow growing, and actually it's to stay for and then.
Right.
For health, but they use this combination, and I guess maybe the combination of the chemo and this, it helps prolong life. But I don't know, do they actually use it just for itself?
Do they just use
it by themselves? Because I know they use it with chemo.
So for this, they've only used it on patients with late stage prostate cancer.
Yes, but they usually combine it with chemotherapy.
Right.
But what happens if they just use this one without the chemo?
They haven't done it with earlier stage or with patients from earlier stages, and that could be due to the differentiation process of the tumor. So because it's a fairly gradual process, so tumors that are in the earlier stages of differentiation might not present the PAP protein on its surface for the product to work.
Cheaper and a lot more things can be known about it. But I think right now not the main cause, it's just to ease pain. It's also like to see where it can lead. The key point is that it gives 4 months at the end of treatment. Your patients are already metastasized and it's already end.
Mm-hmm.
But the main focus of this is not just to ease treatment, it's to provide better treatment. So I don't know exactly when they start chemo in stage 4.
Because they develop resistance in the last stage, so
yeah.
The drug doesn't work anymore. Probably this is what they use in immunotherapy, right?
Okay, so that's
the result.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay, so that's the result.
I wonder if it couldn't be used earlier as kind of a prophylactic almost. So that if you did go in, now your immune system is all ready for that.
There are papers of other cancers, they already do combination, as Natalia said, it's like they do combination immunotherapy and also the targeted therapy, so the chemotherapy.
Right, but only on stage 4 patients. If you did it on stage 3 patients, maybe it would be you get much more time alive. On the other hand, you only have stage 3 and you're committing to $93,000. So it's a tough decision, I guess.
And it could also be for the patients, because once they don't have any other options, then they might be more open. And then also for the approval process.
Right, but from a biological point of view, it might make sense to give it early, because you're dealing with the immune system and putting in a memory, essentially.
Yes.
I wonder why they don't activate the B cells, the T cells, in vitro also, rather than just put the dendritic cells back into the patient.
Because the T cell creates antibodies using BDJ in combination, and each cell only has 3 chances to get it right or it dies. So I think it might be better from like a logistics point of view to create the antigen-presenting cells, because in that way the body can create its own combinations of T cells and see what works. Because this will be there no matter what, but then the T cell will lyse if it doesn't get it right and it keeps recombining. So it might be better in that.
Right, but maybe, I mean, that doesn't mean you shouldn't also put in the antigen-presenting cells, but maybe give them a shot in vitro first and put them all in. Seems like it wouldn't hurt. I'm thinking maybe the dendritic cells are limiting in this case, because there's usually not that many of them. So, and a lot of them aren't a lot of them in solid tissues, like in the gut and skin, and they wouldn't be in the circulating blood.
Yeah, I guess the removal process is a bit tedious, so I guess there is merit in looking into it.
I mean, if they put in 10 times more dendritic cells, would they get more than 4 months? And then they could think maybe of a way.
But I think when creating antibodies, to my knowledge, the rate-limiting step in creating or activating a B cell is to get a B cell that's holding the right combination of an antibody that has the correct epitope that would bind to the PAP protein. So then if you use the dendritic cell, you have a higher chance, or because it's always present until you get the right antibody, as opposed to putting a whole bunch of T cells into the body when only 1 in 10 to the 10th T cells contain the right antibody. It might be better to a dendritic cell.
Right, that was my previous question. So my new question was, is the amount of the number of dendritic cells limiting in this process? And if they had a way to get 10 times as many dendritic cells, forget the T cells,
yeah,
would they get more than 4 months? Because you'd increase the probability of mating the right dendritic cell with the right T cell. I'm thinking there's maybe they may be limiting, but there's not that many of them. You have a blood sample, I don't know how big the blood sample is.
But you said that
just to overcome the problem, right? You have the IPS differentiate, but you can have, you know, this IPS system, so you can differentiate any cells eventually themselves.
But that's not what they're doing, right? Are they doing that? Are they differentiating these cells, or are they just taking mature dendritic cells?
Yeah, they're just taking these activated, or these antigen-presenting cells and putting them back.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.